Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, that was an unexpectedly wild week in the world of golf. Anthony Kim resurfaces, Nick Dunlap turns pro, and a Frenchman wins on tour in what continues to be, Rex, the year of the long shot. You are back from Connecticut and all packed up for Pebble Beach. First of all, how's it going?
Glad to be back. It was really, really cold and uncomfortable. Got snowed on a little bit that last morning, Friday morning, when I woke up early. It's a lovely place, I'm sure. I've been told it's a lovely place. We're talking about Connecticut. I've never been there when it's not freezing cold and snow on the ground. So I forced myself to get out of the hotel on Thursday afternoon and just sort of walk around. I was actually staying in Greenwich. Like, I need to see this place. Like, I just
which is beautiful. Greenwich, Connecticut, one of the best places to live in the country. Let's be very clear.
Yes. I mean, I've been told a lot. And it was just cold and it was miserable. I think I sent you some snappy chats. Like, it was foggy and gross. And you're like, man, like, this is what we're doing, right? So we're just gonna sit around and pretend like the sun doesn't exist for 6 months. Is that what we do here? But it was fun to do the show. I did want to say, and you'll back this up, we work with a lot of really, really talented folks at the Golf Channel, a lot of folks I love being on TV with, Todd Lewis, Steve Sands, you. I will say this. No one is better to be on TV with than Damon Hack. He is the easiest person to ever do a TV show with, especially a four-hour TV show, which is what we did Wednesday, which was a marathon session. But he makes it easy, and it was a lot of fun.
Not even a professional TV person, Damon Hack. Like, he cut his teeth just as you and I have cut our teeth, newspapers, magazines, and now I'm with you. Absolutely one of my favorite coworkers here at Golf Channel. Didn't have enough great things to say. Hopefully you did not do, Rex, all of your sightseeing in Connecticut, since you will be back in just a couple weeks' time at Genesis Invitational Week, where I'll be on site at Riviera. Hopefully you've left at least something to do over the next couple of weeks. Real quick, guys, this is the first week that we'll be doing the Wednesday podcast as well, in addition to this Sunday record. Over the next couple of days, we could have some updates on both the PGA Tour's deal with the Strategic Sports Group, as well as finally the final live roster for 2024, as our season does kick off this week at Mayakoba. Speaking of which, somehow, speaking of live, Anthony Kim has not played since 2012. He's actually barely been seen since 2012. And yet, as golf.com first reported, and then was backed up by our buddy Bulldog Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN, Anthony Kim is at least in discussions with both the PGA Tour and LIV about making a professional comeback. Rex, what are your initial impressions of that report?
The least interesting thing to me is where he lands. Like, I know that was the headline, and I know good for golf.com and good for Bulldog for getting it. And the headline is, you know, I don't know, AK is floating with LIV Golf, whatever the case may be. That's the least interesting part of the story in my mind. Wherever it is, he lands. Like, we've done this. We've been there. Like, that's not anything that really is compelling to me. The compelling part is my son texted me on Thursday afternoon. My junior in college texted me asking, who is Anthony Kim and why is he trending? Keep in mind, Anthony Kim last played a tour event 12 years ago. My son was 8 years old. Therefore, he has no idea who this urban legend is. That's the interesting part of the story. I couldn't come up with a comp in any sport. Forget about just golf. Like, give me a comp where someone at that level of the game that wasn't close to retirement, like, I'm not talking about Tom Brady coming back. That's a different animal. Give me someone who was in their prime, which AK was, granted injuries, but someone who was in their prime that walked away for 12 years, a dozen years. Nick Dunlap. He was in, I think I did this right, third grade. Anthony Kim last played at PGA Tour event. The PGA Tour's newest member, Nick Dunlap, by the way. Second most important story of the week. Jordan Spieth was a freshman at Texas. Like, I can keep going on and on and on. It has never happened before. Anthony Kim is this urban legend that, you know, he's Kaiser Sose, kind of dating myself with that reference. I know. But all we've seen for the last dozen years are grainy pictures of him walking into a coffee shop in LA.
It's like Bigfoot.
Yeah. Like, and now he's coming back. And look, I think both of us have talked to people. I've certainly talked to people inside Anthony's camp over the years. And the conversation always goes the same way. Yeah, he's hitting balls one day and he's excited and thinking about a comeback. And then the next day it's like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, whatever that is. No one is 100% sure whatever it is he's been doing for the last 12 years. I find it fascinating that this would be unprecedented. I can't imagine how he pulls it off. Like, I don't know how you walk away from something that's that difficult, that requires that much talent and that much work and that much effort, and come back and land right where he hopes to land, where we left off 12 years ago. But man, what a story.
What a story. It does seem like with each year that passes, like his accomplishments, his notoriety, like it seems to get exaggerated with time. Like we are talking about a three-time PGA Tour winner. We are talking about a player who thumped Sergio Garcia in singles at the 2008 Ryder Cup. Like he blazed a very hot trail for the very short time that he was on the PGA Tour, which was just four seasons before he mysteriously walked away after some injuries. And so the interesting thing to me now is can he still compete? He's 38 years old. So, you know, actually compared to his PGA Tour peers, like he's almost past his prime. The prime for PGA Tour players keeps getting younger and younger. You're probably in that 28 to 32 sweet spot if you're in your athletic prime, and he is well past that. And so does he still have the goods to compete against the world's best? I'm probably skeptical. And the skeptic in me also wonders, why now? Why now at this point would he want to return to professional golf? In both of those reports, golf.com and ESPN, they outline how the sticking point is Anthony Kim's insurance policy, reportedly valued somewhere between $10 and $20 million. If he were to make a return to competitive golf, he would have to pay all or most of that back. And so in that sense, I know you're not interested in where Anthony Kim lands. In that sense, though, LIV Golf does make a lot of sense for Anthony Kim. A, they can give him a lot of the money up front. B, he can play as much or as little as he wants as one of their wild card picks. And C, he's guaranteed, as long as he tees it up, he's guaranteed to make at least $200,000 per appearance, because that is last place money on LIV Golf. And so that side of the equation makes a lot of sense. But if you're the PGA Tour, I mean, you desperately want AK back as well. They have lost a lot of personalities, Rex, over the past couple of years to LIV Golf. Whether it's Bryson, whether it's Brooks, whether it's Phil, whether it's kind of the villain figure of Sergio Garcia or Patrick Reed, they all have, I would say, varying degrees of competitiveness at this point, but there's no discounting that people at least had opinions about those players and they wanted to see them for better or for worse. And I would put AK in that same category as well.
I would as well. If you go back 5, 6, 7 years ago, I'm sure we were having a similar conversation about AK at some point, just because, again, he was this wonderful urban legend that we kept waiting and watching and hoping he would come back. When we first started having these conversations, again, 6 years ago, when you talked about an insurance policy of $10 million or $20 million, whatever the case may be, a lot of gray area on that one. That was a lot of money back then. Now, the reality we live in, I mean, I don't know about you, when it comes to that level of the game, $10 million seems like kind of, Is it really worth either not doing what you want to do? It seems, because now we're dealing with monopoly money. Now we're dealing with everything has a dollar figure attached to it and has a lot of zeros. And $10 million is a lot of money. But if you're an Anthony Kim, as we've seen with so many players, it's not that much. If LIV Golf really wants them, then I'm sure they can make that right. I would counter and say I don't necessarily agree with you and say that LIV Golf is the obvious choice if this is just about mitigating that loss of $10 million or $20 million. Because the way it works on the PGA Tour now, he would get plenty of sponsor exemptions. He'd get plenty of opportunities to make up that money. Like, it wouldn't be guaranteed. It wouldn't be upfront, but you have the opportunities to certainly make at least that much, if not more. Like, the money part, again, doesn't even interest me. This is all about, like, you saw the same video of his swing, I'm sure, earlier this week, and it looks fine. But
That was a dated video from 5 years ago. Our friend Ryan French of Monday Q Info, He backed up his reporting, said he was incorrect, and that was actually from 5 years ago at the Madison Club. So that was not a recent swing video, but by all indications, he is ramping up his training.
And let's don't ignore it. You pointed out he's 38 years old. He also had a lot of injuries that made him walk away from the game 12 years ago. There was surgery. I believe it was a back surgery. There was tendonitis in his left elbow and his left wrist. Like, there were a lot of things that was sort of building up and compiling, and he probably wasn't taking care of himself like he needed to at that point in time. I just don't see how this happens, but man, it's must watch TV. Like, I'm not turning away. I'm not blinking. I'm not missing any minute of it if it happens.
I mean, it'd be a great story to cover as a 36-year-old who you know, really enjoyed watching Anthony Kim when I was growing up and just getting into golf media. Like, I started in 2010 and he was already off the tour by 2012. So I didn't even really cross paths in that respect. Like, you want to cover Anthony Kim's comeback, but as a golf fan, I'm not sure you actually want him to come back. He has like this cult hero status. It's only been exaggerated over time. If he comes back and he plays poorly, like all of the childhood memories that we had from a decade or two ago, I feel like there's a potential for this story to just kind of peter out. And I don't think that's fun for any golf fan. Like, I'm not sure we actually want him to come back.
No, I get what you're saying. And I guess I can romanticize it enough to agree with you. I did cover AK. I actually wrote a feature on him his rookie year. And I remember sitting on a hill overlooking the La Quinta course. And we sat down and did like a 30-minute interview, just kind of talking. And he came about the game in a very unique way. I mean, his issues with his dad, who was very demanding and very tough on him when he was a junior and in college, are pretty well documented. So I don't know, like, after the fact, after I did that story, after he has the career he has, after he walks away and disappears, it became easier for me to wrap my mind around most of the players that you and I interview. Most of the stories that we tell are stories about passion. Like, guys just love this game. Like, if you don't like the game, you're probably not going to last very long in it. Like, you just thoroughly enjoy doing this. You thoroughly enjoy competing. I always question, from the moment I wrote that story, his rookie year, how much he actually loved the game. Like, this is what was expected of him.
He liked the fame. He liked the attention that was associated with it. But is he a Scottie Scheffler who plays every single day, or Justin Thomas, who has lived and breathed and slept golf for all of his 30 years on earth? Probably not. Different cats.
And that's tough when you're 38 years old. Like, I think you and I both know enough players who, once they get to 38, if they don't have that passion still, you're not going to be able to compete. Like, you have to love not just going to the golf course and grinding away, but going to the gym, going to therapy, doing all the little things at 38 years old you have to do, because the 18-year-olds you're now competing against are going to whip you if you don't do that.
Again, that's why I'm not sure we want him to come back. If he comes back and falls flat on his face, it's just kind of a sad ending to what has otherwise been a mysterious cult figure in the game. I don't think anything is imminent on that front, but we could certainly see something
maybe
over the next couple months. How about, Rex, a player who will be on the PGA Tour this week is a full-fledged card-carrying member. That, of course, is Nick Dunlap. You and I went deep on his decision last week on the podcast. I was one who, even though I knew deep down he would be ridiculous to turn down the opportunities, both financial and playing, over the next couple of months, selfishly, I kind of wanted to see him return to college golf just because I thought that it potentially set him up longer term. Didn't happen that way. He said it was the easiest, hardest decision he has ever had to make. Easy because he now is into the signature events, that lucrative series, the second of which is this week at Pebble Beach for the remainder of the season. And he's exempt on tour through 2026. The hard part, saying goodbye to his coaches, saying goodbye to his teammates at the halfway point of the season. But now, Rex, that Nick Dunlap is on tour, that he is going to have a full playing slate for the remainder of 2024, what do you think he can actually do now for the rest of this PGA Tour season?
I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit here, because apparently your lovely wife, Amy, doesn't understand the construct here. The construct between the two of us is we have fun and we like to needle each other. And whether if that's on this podcast, or we're lucky enough to do it on air, or last week I did take a couple pot shots, and apparently your wife did not like, she didn't like me making fun of you that you had a golf cart. Was that it that she didn't like?
No, she said that you trashed our Georgia logoed golf cart. And she also took great offense that you called it a four seater. When it is fact, yeah.
It's a six seater.
It's a six seater and is great for the community.
That is completely understandable, and I should be slapped on the wrist about that. But she certainly understands the construct of we like going back and forth. And by that, I use this as an example. That is by far one of your worst takes ever, that Nick Dunlap should stay in college. I think we can all agree with that. As I recycled it as the week went on and on and on, because that's all we talked about for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday pretty much was Nick Dunlap. And the idea that somehow my friend Ryan Lavner seems to think it's best if he goes back to school. And we can all agree that in this particular case, no. Like if it was a different time, different era, maybe I could have understand where you're coming from. Not right now. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
I wrote a column on golfdaniel.com.
I didn't see that.
Kind of going into his decision and why it was so difficult, and that you could understand why he was so emotional. You could understand why he was teary-eyed during that press conference, because it was really tugging at him, and you could tell that his life had just gotten demonstrably changed overnight. And I saw a great example on Twitter where if you're a pre-med student, right, and you saw someone suffer a heart attack on the street, and you had to help resuscitate them, you had to get them into the EMT, and you eventually saved their life. And someone saw that. If a doctor saw that and said, you know what? You did a phenomenal job. We're making you a doctor right now. Pack up your stuff and let's go. Let's go to Phoenix. And we're gonna work at some sort of hospital immediately. Your life had changed. You have friends. You have a routine. You have a schedule. You have goals. You have if you're a college student, you've got formals coming up. Like there is everything that you want to do, and nothing in your mind said, "I'm about to turn pro, and have my life demonstrably changed." It's going to change overnight. Quite frankly, you're just not ready for that to happen. Now, I did like the fact that Nick Dunlap pulled out of the Farmers so he could make this decision. But look, he's jumping headlong into his career right now. I do think that there will be an adjustment period, just his life getting turned upside down. He's not going to be used to playing this much because the college schedule just doesn't allow for that. Of course, as essentially a rookie on the PGA Tour, these are all courses that he's seeing for the first time. But I do think that this is kind of a different example, Rex, and why I'm kind of bullish on Nick Dunlap for the rest of the season, not just because he just won on the PGA Tour, but the fact that when you look at the kids who are going to be turning pro after the NCAA championship in late May, early June, whether it's Michael Thjorn Bjornsson, whether it's Gordon Sargent, those guys, the clock is already starting on them, where they have to take advantage immediately of the limited opportunities that they're going to have, either through sponsor exemptions, PGA Tour U status, whatever the case may be. That's not the case for Nick Dunlap. He now has a cushion. He now has an opportunity to learn. If he posts a couple of T45s, I don't think anyone is going to particularly care. The rest of the season is gravy. It's a bonus. And I think that's very beneficial for a 20-year-old coming out on the PGA Tour at this point in time.
Well, and that's why the take was so bad. Like, again, this isn't 5 years ago when if you got on a hot run as an amateur, you had to make a choice. Do I want to play the Masters? Do I want to hang around and try to play NCAA?
Phil Mickelson won on the PGA Tour as an amateur. He went back, not just
Phil Mickelson didn't have to worry about getting into signature events. That's the difference now. The difference now is the clock was running from the moment he won the American Express. He essentially had 5 days to make this choice, because if not, you weren't going to maximize what you were going to get. By that, I mean, if he took up membership right now, he was going to get into every signature event, including Pebble Beach, which starts this week. And so that's why he had to commit. I will pull back the curtain a little bit more as well. You watched the press conference. I think a lot of people watched the press conference from Tuscaloosa. And I will say this. I don't remember that ever happening before either. And I'm not even saying, like, everyone, when I brought this up, said, "Hello world," and Tiger Woods. No, that was,
no, I mean, it was essentially like a college quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, like I don't ever remember that happening to any player. And I don't think, like, look, some people are going to think I'm bagging on Nick Dunlap. I don't think that's the way he would want to do it at all. If I guess Nick Dunlap had his choice, he would just assume, put something on social media and be done with it. This was probably, he got some good advice. However, there was some anxiety going into that press conference because we were going to run it live on Golf Today. And suddenly there was a lot of questions going on because he was kind of late getting to the stage. And everyone, there was a lot of speculation about, well, maybe he's not turning pro. I think we all assumed, okay, he's holding a press conference. He's going to play Pebble. So suddenly all of these things started cropping up. None of those things happened. And you can figure out what they were. But it is interesting, to your point, I actually am bullish. And not just because he won the American Express, it's how he won the American Express. It's not as though you saw any real weaknesses. Like, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I spent a lot of time picking apart Nick Dunlap's game when he was at Alabama. But just what I saw at the American Express, there were no weaknesses. Like, and I keep going back to Victor Hovland. Like, when he came out of college, he was really good. And he's one of those guys that was touched by the hand of God, with one exception. Short game, needed to get better. As we've talked about endlessly on this podcast, he's turned that into one of the better parts of his game. I don't see any parts of the game. Now, maybe, to your point, it becomes a grind for him. You're right. This isn't college anymore. Like, he's going to have to play a lot of events over the next few months, and we'll get a better look and better gauge of exactly who he is. But right now, I don't see a weakness.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, he has all the tools. He has maximum ball speed with the driver. He's a very good iron player. I think most notably about him, talking to some of his coaches, talking to some of his teammates, like, this is one of the best putters they've ever seen. We obviously saw that with his record-setting performance at PGA West, but I think that can save him for some of these golf courses if his ball striking isn't quite up to snuff. He has just such a tidy short game. And so I do think there'll be a little bit of a learning curve over the next couple of months, but it's going to be very fun to see him, just as it's going to be very fun to see the Gordon Sargents of the world and the Michael Thorbjornsons of the world as well. Sausage finger, please.
Sausage finger. Thank you very much. I think you usually transition to that by saying sausage finger. It's one of your favorite things to do. I will come back around. And again, this is by way of apology to your wonderful wife, Amy. Of all your takes, that was a bad take. I will say that I actually gave you a monsoon of love last week, because I have come to the realization that we need to have more Wednesday through Saturday golf tournaments. And that was yours from a few years ago. I'm a huge fan. Like, look, we're not going to do it in the middle of the summertime when there's no football. If there's ever football, whether it's Saturday football or Sunday football, why don't we just do Wednesday through Saturday? Because that's glorious.
I mean, we need it. I would put the entire first month of the season on this Wednesday through Saturday schedule. And look, there's still going to be stuff that's going on Saturday. They have the college football playoff game, which tends to fall on a Saturday. You're still going to have the wild card and the divisional round that's falling on Saturday. So there is going to be some conflict. I just don't see any PGA Tour event realistically going to a Tuesday through Friday to avoid it outright, because there's just, you're not just going to get the attendance numbers on site that you really want to get. But to actually clear the deck on Sunday is just, it's phenomenal.
Yep,
that's what you love to see. Now, we did, Rex, have golf, as you mentioned, on Saturday, and it was finishing up in prime time from Torrey Pines, where you and I have spent a lot of time. And an unlikely winner with Matthew Pavon. It's actually a very good story. A journeyman type, 31 years old. He finally broke through at the Spanish Open last fall in what was his 185th career start on the PGA Tour. He then, a couple months later, birdied all four the last four holes in Dubai to be among the top 10 players on the Race to Dubai standings, to then earn his PGA Tour card. All he's done in 2024 now was win in his third career start against a kind of an eclectic leaderboard on one of the PGA Tour's most stout courses. What else stood out to you from the week, either from Pavon's performance or the rest of the leaderboard at Torrey Pines?
Two headlines that I actually saw yesterday. One is Pavon becomes the first Frenchman since World War II to win on the PGA Tour. Had no idea that was the thing. Like, if you'd have asked me, I guess you should have known in the back of your mind, but World War II is a long, long time ago. So the idea that he did something that hasn't been done since then is really, really cool. The other one was another headline, and I'm not going to say the website that it was on, but it refers to the heroic shot that Pavon hit on the 18th hole, which is from the left rough. It was 145 yards, hits to about 8 feet.
Makes phenomenal, phenomenal shot. If that was a
shot, Rory... would you call it heroic though? I'm taking exception. I don't think it was a heroic shot. I don't know. What else was he going to do?
He could have bailed outright. Certainly. He could have bailed outright. Although, I mean, if he makes bogey, knowing that Hogard was on the green and was most likely to two putt, he's going to lose by one. I just love the fact that he took it on. He hit it in the exact spot that you need to, that was going to feed towards the hole. He carried the water and he pulled it off. I mean, that was a, I don't know about heroic. That was a phenomenal golf shot under the circumstances. A guy who's in his very first attempt trying to chase down a PGA Tour title. The rough was insanely juicy, and to muscle it out of there in the absolute perfect spot, golf shot, one of the shots of the year.
Really good golf shot under the pressure, given the circumstances, everything that you just pointed out. Really good golf shot. Heroic? I don't know. I don't like that one. I'm gonna go ahead and say no.
Who was the website? Who was the writer?
I don't know. Which would the website be? Oh, I know where it was. It was NBCSports.com/golf.
Oh no. You hate to see that.
Yeah.
Shout out Mercer Bags.
Let's tag working. This one so we can get a good 25-18. Make sure you scribble that down.
Heroic. I don't know about heroic. I would say gutsy.
Gutsy shot. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. Like, look, it was
gritty.
I don't know.
I don't even know.
Clutch. Like, there's a bunch of different ways you could do it. Sure. I'm going to channel my inner Eamon Lynch. My guess is you have to do a round table on Monday morning on golf today. So this will be one of Eamon Lynch's topics, is not so much that Pavon won. It's what it means for those Europeans who now get tour cards. He actually edged out Rasmus Højgaard to take that last tour card on the PGA Tour last year at the DP World Tour Championship. I'm going to say this, both sides of the Atlantic don't like this. The European Tour players essentially don't like it because they feel like it turned their circuit into an official feeder circuit for the PGA Tour. Can't really argue with it. On the American side, PGA Tour players don't like it because they're giving up 10 tour cards. That's really, really hard. So both of those guys don't like it. It's one of the rare times when you have equal amount of hatred from both sides of a situation. I would counter it and say that this week was, and not just because Pavon won, was a really good example of why they should have done this probably a long time ago. If you looked at that leaderboard, Jaeger, who is, look, he's kind of like that Sepp Straka thing. Like, he is European.
He's a six-time winner on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yes, I get it. But you had Nikolaj Højgaard. You had obviously Pavon. I mean, the leaderboard was just riddled with Europeans. Now,
Thomas Dietrich, who was in the same category.
I mean, it was amazing when you sit and you look at it. There's a lot of reasons I understand why both sides don't like it. But if you need a really good example of why, that kind of ends the conversation of why it's a good thing, there it is, right there. Torrey Pines, Saturday afternoon, and you get to see exactly why this is important. Because those players, and Pavon's probably not the player that I would be talking about in this particular situation, but Højgaard certainly is. You don't want to create any sort of roadblocks for a player like that to run into that could trip him up early in his career. And I'll give the PGA Tour credit and the DP World Tour credit. I mean, this had to be buy-in from both sides.
And I'll be very curious to see what the retention rate is for those European Tour graduates. You know, we look at it every year on the Korn Ferry Tour, the guys who stick, the guys who are kind of in that middle, kind of that gray area for their entirety, whether they move up, whether they move back. I do think there's the potential. 10 might be a little too many. I'd probably side with five, and I could understand why some PGA Tour loyalists are a little fed up with PGA Tour leadership at this point, because those guys have priority over the Korn Ferry Tour. That was kind of one of the big sticking points at the beginning of the season. If you were one of the top 10 European Tour players on the priority rankings, that was a higher than the PGA Tour's own feeder system in the Korn Ferry Tour and those 30 graduates. Again, that's getting far too into the weeds, but Matthew Pavon's breakthrough at Torrey Pines, as well as Nikolaj Højgaard's runner-up finish, I think was validation for this particular system. My big takeaway, actually I had two of them. Nikolaj Højgaard's a stud. I mean, Rasmus, his twin brother, almost won on the DP World Tour in the exact same week. I love his swing. I love his game. I thought he was fantastic with Amanda Renner afterward going into it. I hadn't heard him in kind of a press conference setting all that much in my career. I was blown away how articulate he was, how thoughtful he was. You can tell kind of the hunger that resides within him. It's going to be great to see the Højgaard twins both on the PGA Tour, which I do think will happen as early as 2025. But he's, I think, a great asset, and just 22 years old. Dude's a stud. Also, secondly, Rex, I really like Torrey Pines. I'm not sure the architecture wonks like it. It probably is a little bit one-dimensional. It's long. It's brutish. You have to kind of pipe it off the tee. But I really think it'd be a shame if this tournament lost some of its luster. It no longer draws a top field. Even if it falls off what could eventually be a PGA Tour / World Tour concept, I think it's one of the PGA Tour's best courses. Obviously, the scenery is outstanding, but there's a punishment in it and a penalty for errant shots. That's what I think Torrey Pines does best. We've seen it in major championships. We've seen it every year on the PGA Tour schedule. I really like watching PGA Tour players play there, and it'd be a shame if somehow that's reduced over the next couple of years.
I actually looked this up. The field this year, according to the world ranking, is better than what it was last year. So keep in mind that we did have designated events, a little bit different scenarios than the signature events, the way they're spaced out, the fields, the way that works out. But I mean, I was kind of worried about the same thing that you just touched on. The idea that somehow Torrey Pines wouldn't be in this rotation of whatever a world tour schedule is going to look like. And we're assuming that's the way we're heading. I can't imagine how Torrey Pines isn't in that mix, because I'm with you. And I think we had this conversation over the first 3 weeks of the season when 20, 25, 30 under par was winning. And my comment was always, look, man, Torrey Pines is just around the corner. And then it's going to be Riviera. And then it's going to be Bay Hill. And then it's going to be TPC Sawgrass. Like, there's plenty of places where guys are going to have to grind and work hard. I don't mind the birdie fest. I will say this, and Todd Leonard, who is Golf Digest writer, longtime writer in San Diego, I actually wanted to get him on the record on this one. I'm more of a North Course guy. Like, I don't particularly like the South Course. I think I played it a few
years. Wow. See, I would actually go the opposite. I wish the tournament was 72 holes on the South Course.
I don't mind. No, let me take that back. As a PGA Tour event, I really like the South Course. Like, I enjoyed, like, the views are great. Like, it's second to none, but it's sort of the shot making that it requires from a PGA Tour pro. We saw it. I mean, we just got through talking for 5 minutes about the way Pavon played the 18th hole. I'm speaking just personally. If I lived in San Diego, I'm probably not playing the South Course very often. Like,
I play the North Course totally.
Every day. Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 It's much more fun. There's a greater variety. You still get some of the crazy scenic shots. However, like, the South Course doesn't look particularly fun, especially in tournament conditions where the rough is that thick and the fairways are that pinched. Like, the 12th hole just looks abysmal. If you're missing the fairway at players at our level who cannot muster the swing speed to extricate balls from that thick rough, you'd make 7, 8, or 9. It's just a dead straight hole with just nothing but thick rough. Like, that doesn't look fun.
It doesn't. No. And we can sit here and go through the tour schedule. I find most of the courses I enjoy are not the ones that are the major championship test anyways, which is probably not a surprise given the state of my game.
Rex, I do think when you get to this world tour concept, like, they're going to have to really think through this. This is actually my favorite part of the PGA Tour schedule is right now. I know a lot of people like the Florida Swing because it's getting you excited for the Masters. Obviously people like the Travelers Championship and the Memorial and the Canadian Open. Like, I think that's a decent swing as well. You and I both love our fortnight in Scotland or England with the Scottish Open leading in the Open Championship. The FedEx Cup playoffs are great, but I love this. I love the two events in Hawaii. PGA West is kind of nostalgic for me. My grandparents lived right down the street. And then you get into the stretch now with Torrey Pines, then Pebble, then Phoenix, then Riv. Like, this is the best part of the PGA Tour schedule. While over in Europe, they're going to want to stake their claim to Abu Dhabi and Dubai as well to begin the season. So I think that's something to figure out. I'm not sure if I'm in the minority and think this is the best stretch of the PGA Tour season, but I can't get enough golf over these next couple of weeks. I just wish it was completely separate from football as opposed to kind of dividing our attention.
I'm with you. The interesting thing is, I mean, during my career as a journalist, not yours, but during my career as a journalist, the West Coast Swing struggled. Like, they had to come up with a point system and a way to reward players for playing on the West Coast because everyone was starting to gravitate towards Florida getting ready for the Masters. I think it had a lot to do with the Tiger Woods effect, because Tiger sort of had a very clear schedule and he didn't deviate from that. And he had a lot of success. So I think players sort of started to follow his lead. It's gone completely the other way now. Like, I don't know. And look, this is a little bit different because of the times we live in, but we talked about how hard it was for guys to get into Sony. Like, it was a really, really good field at Sony. I think Torrey Pines was better than I expected. The American Express was better than I expected. Yes, next week at Pebble. You're right. Like, it's a really cool part of the schedule for a lot of reasons. One, I love the primetime finishes. Two, I don't know that you can really compare the golf courses. Like, I think this string of golf courses is probably the best collection we see on tour all season long.
Rex, you were hitting the road on Monday morning. We're not going to get into the potential PGA Tour deal. We're not going to get into LIV Golf. We're not even going to get into a Pebble preview because you and I will be tackling that in the Wednesday podcast. But before we get out of here, anything else on your mind for this edition?
No, I'm a little surprised you're not outside. Today, we're taping this on Sunday because clearly the PGA Tour event ended on Saturday. It's a conference championship Sunday. It's a big day for both of us. You were firing up the grill. You were getting stuff ready. Is there a reason why we didn't do it live from the back porch?
Yes, because that is where my two mongrels are currently devouring.
Your beautiful children, you mean? Yep.
Their Lunchables, yes, exactly. This is definitely like an intricate dance of trying to get the ribs that I'm smoking done today at a proper time while still doing our work obligations and firing off this podcast. And so before you and I hopped into the StreamYard record, I was rushing outside. I was throwing the charcoal down. I was gassing it up, getting that ready to go. I threw on four splits. Those hopefully are burning down to coals as we speak. And at that point, hopefully I've got the smoker running from 250 to 275, and we'll be able to start the rib process and pull those off around 4 or 5 o'clock. It should be midway through what hopefully is a great Chiefs Ravens game. What do you have, Rex?
I'm doing ribs as well, and then they wanted burnt ends, so I'm going to do pork belly burnt ends again. So it's a little bit of a juggling act. So I'm with you. The timing of it's kind of tough.
Don't scorch them. Don't scorch them. I know you had
no. I figured that part out. They actually have to almost under smoke them, is what I discovered, because then because you're going to kind of, after I smoke them or I flash fry them very, very quickly. And then you kind of put them in the oven and let them cook the rest of the way.
Those do sound delicious. I look forward to your snappy chats, folks. It could be a busy few days in the world of golf. So in the meantime, in between our two podcast records, make sure you guys go to nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news and updates from the world of golf. As previously mentioned, Rex and I will be back on Wednesday. He will be at Pebble. I will be in my home studio. We'll fire off another preview podcast as well as catch up to any updates that have been on the PGA Tour. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a great rest of the weekend. We'll talk to you in a couple of days.